but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Pac-12, Mountain West, headed to mediation. They have asked a judge in the United States District Court of Northern California for another stay. They had a 60-day stay where they didn't get any mediating done. They will now schedule a mediation. They have a scheduled mediation for May the 19th, I am told. I've talked to both sides. It's interesting. I'm kind of a mediator in this case. But I've talked to both sides, and both sides are saying, yeah, we're going to go in, we're going to negotiate or mediate in good faith. And then if they have a good first day of mediation, there will be more scheduled. If they don't, it could get ugly very quickly. Here to talk about it, a business lawyer and the founder of Innovative Law Group, a Eugene, Oregon law firm, Alan Thayer, joining us. He's got some thoughts on the topic. I want to pick his brain a little bit. Thanks for making time for us.
Oh, happy to do so. Thanks for inviting me.
Give us an idea. Like, you know, I've talked about this case a lot, and I wrestle with this because sometimes the audience, I go, how much do they want to hear about this? But it's important. Like, the Pac-12 and the formation of the Pac-12 is important stuff, and I think especially Oregon State and Washington State fans are tuned into what is going on. But help us understand how a mediation works. They're scheduled for May 19th. The sides will get there. There's two lawsuits that are going to be talked about in mediation. One of them is the Pac-12's antitrust lawsuit they filed against the Mountain West, basically saying you treated us like a loan shark and you gave us some anti-competitive terms on this deal that we signed, and we don't think it's legal. And then the second lawsuit is filed in a Denver, Colorado court by Utah State, Colorado State, and Boise State. They're suing the Mountain West, saying, hey, your exit fees of $18 million to $38 million that you're asking for are too high. How do they simultaneously talk about these two suits in a mediation?
Well, the settlement of a lawsuit is like any other transaction parties might enter into. You're not going to reach agreement unless you equalize the expectations of the parties. So, you know, the Pac-12 could say, we owe you nothing. The Mountain West could say, we owe you, you owe us $55 million. That's a widespread. But since the filing of the lawsuit, presumably there's been discovery, and each side has at least seen documents that the other may use in their case. That's part of the equalizing expectations. So, for example, if there is the smoking gun document that you have referred to, that could greatly enhance one side's expectations and lower the other side's expectation, but bring them closer to agreement. And that is what a mediator does. A mediator is not an arbitrator. They're not ruling on points of evidence, whether something's admissible or not, or they're not deciding questions of fact, but they are meeting with the parties, listening to them, sharing information, sharing the mediator's expertise, and trying to reduce the expectations of each side.
I think it's interesting, and I had one attorney tell me something along the lines of, a successful mediation, both parties walk away feeling like they didn't get everything they wanted, but they also feel fairly treated. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that is a common statement that goes around the mediation circles, and I think every mediation I've been to, I've heard the mediator say something very similar to that.
I am curious why they didn't mediate in the original 60-day period. I'm going to tell you what they told me, But you've been practicing law for 40 years. You tell me what read between the lines for us a little bit here. They originally got a 60-day stay, never scheduled a mediation, never picked a mediator, and now they're going back to the court and saying we need more time. Is it possible? They're telling me that, hey, these are chair one, chair two litigators. They're all really busy. Is it possible they didn't talk informally at all, that the case is so sensitive they didn't want to have conversations, or did they have those conversations and say, well, we're unable to come to an agreement without a mediator. Now we need a mediator.
Well, it's probably the latter. And in fact, that's the case in almost every lawsuit. There's been some discussions of mediation or a settlement, even if it is pay us the $55 million and we can be done with you, or we'll pay you nothing and you will like it. I mean, in theory, those are settlement conversations, but I'm sure they've talked about more than that. Even if they had scheduling problems, and I don't know how credible that is, it could be true, but even if they had scheduling problems, there have been discussions going back and forth of some kind. I always looked at litigation as a means of imposing deadlines. You don't want to reach, if something doesn't happen by this date, then you have to file an answer. If it's not settled by this date, then you have to produce documents. If something doesn't happen by this date, we will go to mediation. So I am sure, particularly as each side has shared documents, there have been some discussions, whether by telephone, whether by email, whether by letter. I would be floored if there were not any discussions of any type.
The Mountain West Conference approached the Pac-12 and said, hey, we should sit down and talk. And you know, they're the ones that proposed the mediation. Doesn't surprise me, because in my conversations with some of the presidents of the Mountain West, they have been more about, we should merge. Why are we fighting? But it is being presented as a sign of weakness. You've done this for four decades. How do you view the Mountain West, you know, and their stance of being the one to propose the mediation?
Over the years, I've heard people say, if you're the first to float an offer or first to suggest settlement, that's a sign of weakness. I don't buy it. I don't believe it at all. 90-some percent of all cases settle. You don't settle unless you start talking about settlement. And if one side's not going to suggest settlement, I'll do it. That doesn't mean we have a weak case. Sometimes it means we have a very strong case. I don't think the Mountain West has a strong case, by the way, but I don't put a lot of credence into suggesting that the request for mediation was a sign of weakness.
Alan Thayer is our guest. He is the founder of Innovative Law Group in Eugene. And, you know, you've been at this a long time. You mentioned you don't think the Pac-12 has a weak case, meaning they've got a case here. What do you see from your chair?
Well, there's actually two components of the case, and everyone's been focusing on the antitrust side. And, I mean, and they're dead serious about their antitrust claims. They have a law firm that has tremendous antitrust talent. Not only antitrust talent, but antitrust as it applies to sports. They are the attorney for the Major League Baseball Players Association. They understand antitrust. But there's a second claim as well, and it's a contract claim. And it is a rule of contract law that any party can breach a contract, but if you do, you have to pay damages. What damage did the other party incur? In certain situations, when damages are difficult to predict, but the parties make a legitimate effort to predict what the damages will be, they can insert in their agreement what is called a liquidated damage provision. And every once in a while, you'll hear about liquidated damages. However, what you cannot do in a contract is you cannot impose a penalty. So the question, particularly as to the $55 million poaching fee, is was that a valid attempt to liquidate damages, estimate what the damage would be, or is it a contractual penalty? And when you consider that under the Mountain West agreement, each school that leaves has to pay $17 million to, I forget what the top end is.
38.
$38 million. Well, what damage would be incurred on top of $17 to $38 million? So it really makes it look like a penalty. Under the contract theory then, if the agreement not to poach is valid, that's the antitrust claim, if the agreement not to poach is valid, and this is determined to be an unenforceable penalty rather than a valid liquidated damage claim, then the courts could consider, okay, Mountain West just entered in or will be entering into a new media rights agreement. How much less was that in that media rights agreement without the five schools that left? And that's the measure of damage. It'll be on the margin.
My understanding, you know, I was curious why Boise State, Colorado State, and Utah State, have joined this lawsuit in Denver against the Mountain West. They banded together. I was curious why, you know, no Fresno State, no San Diego State. I was told that the CSU system, because it is a system, does not allow the members to participate in litigation that would affect other members of the CSU system, meaning San Jose State still in the Mountain West, therefore Fresno State, San Diego State not able to sue the Mountain West Conference. Does that wash for you? Does that make sense?
Well, it does make sense. During the Pac-12 litigation in Western Washington, it did look funny to see the state of Oregon through Oregon State University suing the state of Oregon through the University of Oregon. Same thing with Washington, where you have the Washington Attorney General's office representing each side, one representing UW, the other one representing WSU. So, yeah, that makes sense to me. Is it true? I don't know, but it could very well be true. And if so, I think they're probably smarter than the states of Oregon and Washington in that regard.
Alan Thayer, our guest attorney, and the case we are talking about, of course, involving the Pac-12 and the Mountain West Conference, obviously going to be a big one that affects a lot of people. But Alan, you've been at this long time, Innovative Law Group in Eugene. You tell me, there's a media rights deal that's being negotiated in the background. And I was on a phone call right before the show today with a source in the Pac-12. And I was asking, I said, look, is part of the reason why you haven't announced the 2026 and beyond media deal, is part of the reason why that you don't want the appearance that, hey, we got a great deal, we're flush with money, and does that affect your leverage in a mediation, particularly if some of the new partners happen to be old Mountain West partners that are sliding over to the Pac-12? Does that complicate a mediation if that's the case? I guess I'm just trying to ask from a legal standpoint what you would advise the Pac-12 if this were the case.
Well, that's a really good question you raised. And there's a lawyer in Eugene who is a Cougar, John Bristetta. He raised something similar in discussions with me. His point, though, was once you know what the media rights deals are, you know what the damage calculations could be. But you point out something very important by asking that question, and also by your statement about the Mountain West coming out and saying let's merge as their opening position. This isn't a simple lawsuit where one side is suing the other for money and it's a zero-sum game. Every dollar that goes to one is a dollar that comes from the other. Here, there are so many moving parts, and you've done a great job of reporting on many of them, but we don't know what we don't know. So we have the possibility of these media rights deals. We have what happens with UNLV. The Pac-12 has been very open about looking for additional revenue sources. Are some of those additional revenue sources something they could share with the Mountain West? The Mountain West and the Pac-12 ought to be locking arms and marching together in what are likely upcoming battles with the SEC and the Big Ten and Fox and ESPN. It is all so intricate, and there's so many things going on that we could have a simple settlement that's really mostly about dollars, or we could have something truly, truly innovative and exciting. Love to see the latter, but we just don't know.
Before I let you go, I want to raise the worst case scenario. And I've talked to both sides. One side gave me a quote saying this could get ugly fast if they're not on the same page early in mediation. The other side has used the term, we could go to the mattresses and it's an all or none equation in a courtroom. What is the risk? What's the risk of, the Pac-12 goes to court, worst case, the judge says, yeah, the poaching fees are valid and it's not an antitrust violation and you owe $55 million for the Mountain West? I guess the worst case is, hey, this is an antitrust violation. It's a zero for you. Is that a possibility, and is that enough to force these sides into that ground that you talk about where they have to sort of wrap their heads around the idea of let's come up with a deal that works for everybody?
Well, you're absolutely right. Those are the risks. You could compound those risks a little bit in that the loser could very well have to pay the winner's attorney fees. Ooh. So there's even more than $55 million at risk. So you take the potential liability, and then you factor into that the probability of loss. Do you think it's a 50-50 deal? Do you think it's a 60-40 deal? The other side may, their calculus might be a little different on the assignment of risk. And that's what the parties go into the mediation with. And that's part of the job of the mediator to try to challenge the party's assessment of risk. So you think it's a slam dunk? Well, let me tell you, I'm a federal judge or I'm a retired federal judge, and I've heard a lot of these antitrust cases, and I think you have these issues with your case. Or tell them the other side, I think they're going to be able to slay on these issues, and that only leaves you with this question. And you really have to consider upping your risk assessment as you evaluate the settlement.
You're hitting on...
One thing I will say, I've been through a lot of mediations. The absolute best mediations are with a judge or a retired judge.
Okay. Why?
They have the apparent authority of the robe behind them. They have the credibility of being able to say, I have tried these cases, and this is what I've seen juries do. The private mediators, and there's some good ones out there that aren't judges, and I've been to mediations with them as well, but they are not, those mediations are not as successful as the ones that involve judges.
That was going to be my final question. Why a federal judge and why not, a professional mediator? I am being told one day of mediation on May 19th, and if it goes well enough, there will be more. I got to think there's some, hey, nice to meet you. Let's set some ground rules. Let's talk about things we agree on before we talk about things we don't agree on. That takes some time. So it kind of lends me to believe that it could be multiple days of mediation before they figure out whether or not they have a chance to work this out. Am I reading that wrong, or am I in the right ballpark?
No, I think you're right. I think every mediation I've been involved with, the mediator starts off with the mediator's stock speech that he gives to the parties and, challenging the parties and say, listen, you may think you have a great case, but let me tell you, it's not as good as you think you have, so you want to settle. Mm-hmm. And that actually takes some time meeting with each party. The parties aren't in the same room together. The judge will put one party in one conference room, the other side in a different conference room, and the judge goes back and forth between the parties, or the mediator. It is only once they have an outline of a terms of an agreement, then the mediator will bring everyone together and have them shake hands and smile at each other.
I think this is great info. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, no, I was just going to say that is the way it starts, and then it goes from there. One thing, though, so a one-day mediation, if they're not making progress, it'll be over at 5 o'clock, Maybe sooner. But if they are making progress, these mediations can go late into the night.
Well, I'm hoping for that because I'd like to get back to talking some football and knowing who's in this conference. Alan Thayer, I appreciate your time and your expertise. We'll call upon you as May 19th happens, maybe help us understand it. But thanks for giving us some of your insight and expertise.
Well, happy to do so. Go Beavers.
All right. There's Alan Thayer from Eugene. He's been at it for 40 years. I thought it was good to get an attorney who's got kind of a local understanding, and he's obviously rooting for Oregon State in this case. So we'll see how it goes. Coming up, our big splash, 4 o'clock hour is going to be jam-packed. Mark Stein of the Stein Line talks about the NBA playoffs, and the BFT jurors will assemble at 4:20 to put the NBA and others on trial. Leave it here.